You're listening to Blue Collar CEO, the podcast that's all about helping you build a better, more profitable, and more sustainable home service business. Each week, we'll cover a different topic that will help enable your company to move forward to success. And here's your host, Ryan Redding.
What is up, Blue Collar CEOs? It's Ryan. It is awesome to be with you again. Man, it's been a crazy pace for the past few weeks in our office. I hope things are well with you because it's been just bonkers everywhere. I'm getting ready to introduce you to Al Fagundes. Al, he's been on my radar for a minute, but he actually is the founder and CEO of A. Fagundes Plumbing and Heating. They're based in Massachusetts. And he and his team of techs have been offering top quality workmanship for homeowners and businesses all over Mass. They're growing locally. They're family owned and operated. And we're going to be talking about a lot of things, about kind of his early years starting off in 2003, about the lessons he had to learn of growing too fast, about everything before he had like best practice groups and consultants kind of helping him in the process. Also, we're going to be talking about some of what he's learned about community outreach, about how he likes to give back. And also, he gives a really pointed piece of advice to people who are starting off, trying to kind of learn the grind and scale a business that you probably want to pay attention to. But enough of me, because let's be honest, you don't really care what I have to say. Let's get Al on the show. All right, man, I am really looking forward to having our conversation today because, like I said before, I just hit record. Like, you've been on my radar for like four and a half years. So this is a real big honor to me. But for those who maybe don't know who you are, who you're not on their radar, let's just start there. Like, who are you and what do you do?
Hey, thanks for having me on. My name is Al Fagundes. I'm the owner of Fagundes Plumbing and Heating out of Tyngsborough, Massachusetts, formerly Lowell, Massachusetts. A few years back, we moved to Tyngsborough, which is a neighboring town, and it's a small town. So we went from like 100,000 people person population to about 12,000 people. So,
oh, that's a huge change.
It's a huge change. It was a huge change for Google too. After,
yeah, I was going to say, like, what sort of impact? Because I think a lot of people want to move. Usually it's the opposite. They start in the small town, they go to the bigger town. What was it like for you, like, during that transition? Was it chaotic? Was it stress? Like, it was in general?
Well, that wasn't something that I was worried about, nor did I know how much of an impact that was going to have on my SEO and everything else. Moving to a smaller town and not being affiliated in such a large town that we were in. And it took a little while for it to get traction, but we're back to kind of where we were before. But it was a better move, you know, a larger place, yeah. A lot more warehousing. I mean, a parking, we had to do it. So structurally and infrastructure wise, it had to be done.
Did you keep any part of like the old location, like an address or anything for Google Maps, or no, you let it go?
Yeah, you know, we had this location in Tyngsborough and Lowell for, we overlapped it for about a good year and a half. And then COVID hit, right? And everybody kind of figured out,
I don't need this.
I don't need that extra expense. You know, we consolidated. We're like, because we had our team here, service team here, our installs were here in Tyngsborough, our office staff, because of the office was just better outfitted, it was newer, they were over in Lowell. So it was too many people in different locations. So then we decided to do a new build where we were at in Tyngsborough, and then move the whole office over, and then we sold that piece of property that we had at Lowell.
Got it. What a time though, man, to like make big changes. Gosh, dang. Yeah. So I'm curious, because what, you started the business, was it 2003, something like that?
Yeah, 2003. Me chucking a truck.
Yeah, tell me about that, because I think a lot of guys, well, there's a lot of chucking of trucks. There's a lot of guys who start off like working for themselves, and like maybe they know how to turn a wrench, right? But to scale a business, it's just very, very different. And a lot of guys struggle with transitioning from, you know, slinging stuff out of the back of their van to like scaling a business like to your scale now, which is what, seven-ish mil top line?
Yep. A little over 7 million, about 28 employees.
What was that like for you, starting out, starting to hire a couple people, like starting to like build the infrastructure? Like, what Do you mind talking a little bit about that journey back in the early days?
Have you ever heard of the book, The E-Myth? I'm sure everybody has.
Oh, yeah, of course. That's a solid read. Solid read.
That's me. That whole book was, I believe that whole book was written for me.
You were the dude making cakes?
I was a dude that wanted to do it better than my boss. And then you get out there, you're hustling along, you're doing great for 2 years. And then next thing you know, you got to add people, right? So you start adding some people. And then you still want to do everything because those people don't do it as well as you do. And then you start to go backwards, right? You're like, I'm just going to go back to doing it myself. You know, did all that. I had a person at a time that I had like a 5-person crew. And then I regressed and I went back to me. And then I went back to me and somebody else. And then only in 2011, when I found a consultant that I still work with today in a local BNI group here, I decided, hey, you know, I was either going to sink or swim. I was either going to grow or I was going to go work for somebody else.
That's crazy. So, and I know, I personally know a lot of guys who get like really hungry early on, start hiring guys, realize really quickly they don't know what it takes to have like a 5-person team, for instance, and do the same thing, right? Like it all spins off and like, I'm just going to do everything myself.
And you don't have the mentality sometimes too, right? Because we're technicians. Yeah, we don't have the mentality to how to judge people's days because everybody's having a bad day. You don't know how to take other people when something goes wrong. I've learned so much in the last 20 years of what to say and what not to say. And I still sometimes, like I'll write an email and I always have my emails scheduled out. I don't send them.
Yeah, I do that too. So you're like, you can think on it later, be like, I should not be saying that thing.
Yep, 100%. Sometimes I'll change them like 3 times before they actually go to somebody's inbox.
Yeah, that's a really good technique, especially if you're someone who like struggles with like saying something a little bit too pointed on the first couple tries. Scheduling those emails, lifesaver. What were some of the other earlier like roadblocks? You said a lot of it was like mentality. Do you remember some of the mentality struggles you had? Like I know a lot of guys I know struggling with that transition, like pricing. They feel like they can't charge that much because whatever, right? Like was that ever a roadblock you ran into? Or
Because none of us know how to charge, you know. Yeah. Even till today, so sometimes I struggle with it, right? Even though I have all the tools in the world, sometimes I'm like, you know, I read this book and this book says we should do it like this. And I read that book and that book says you shouldn't charge for the simple stuff, you know, like you would charge for stuff that people can't look up. But when you're first getting into business, you have no idea. Oh, what's Jack Joe like down the street charging? You know what I mean? You don't know. So you charge whatever. Yeah, you try to charge exactly what they're charging, you know, not knowing if you could charge less just to get a job, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I've got a friend of mine who they kind of did something similar, but they went after like government contracts, you know, like military bases. They went after like geothermal installs. And those are really appealing top line jobs, like, you know, because you're talking 8-figure contracts. But they don't, unless you know how to fulfill a big project like that, just like you don't even know how the money flows through the business. It usually ends up really, really bad for a lot of people.
Yeah. One thing I learned, was getting rid of contractors, get into the home service business and staying in the home service business. I really wish I would have done that in the beginning. I gave so much of that work away. Because it was just easier to work for contractors. And, it, you know, it was just one of those things. Like, that's how I got busy right off the bat, right? That's how I got busy as soon as I went into business was contractor work, doing houses, large remodels. And come to find out, I quickly made that change. I think it was in 07 before the 08 bubble. I was just like, a guy from Yellow Pages came by. Actually, it was a girl. She came by. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to do this. I've been meaning to do this. So I put it in a Yellow Page ad, you know, obviously in Yellow Pages, my first name started with A. So I popped up pretty quick, you know, on the listing. I was like one of the first ones and it was the best thing I did because, you know, 08 came around and that having my name in the Yellow Pages at that point was a big deal.
Yeah. There are some markets where Yellow Pages still today kill it. I don't feel like it's always across the board. It depends on your market. But yeah, that's crazy. So that was like, okay, so that's like marketing. So that you're having to learn all these things, like where to find customers, how to run a team, how to price yourself. When did you find your consultant with the BNI group?
2011.
So that was after that still. So what was the bridge between 2008 that got you to 2011? Because 2008, well, if anyone was around then, there was chaos.
Yeah, I mean, 2011 came around. It was about 2009, I think. I was in a different BNI group. But 2008, I was in a different BNI group, and then I decided to move. There was actually a little lag where I wasn't in a networking group because, again, get in the networking group, you get busy, you forget about the networking group, you're like, I don't need this right now anymore. And then you quickly realize, you know, it's all about planting seeds, right? So I went back to a BNI networking group and started networking there. And that's when I met my the consultant that I'm with.
You've said a couple times this idea of being busy, like working with contractors, like being the BNI group, like just being busy, busy, busy. Do you feel like sometimes being busy is the enemy of being profitable? Do you feel like that's like early bait that people fall into?
It is, because this is exactly what happens, right? You're always chasing yourself 90 days from now. So if you're not doing what you're supposed to do in today, okay, in 90 days from now, you are going to feel that repercussion of not doing what you were supposed to do. So if you decided to go out and do a job versus calling the customer back that left you the message, you know, and you blow that customer off for 48 hours, they have already gone ahead with somebody else. So when you do the small, when you don't succeed at the small stuff, it hurts you in about 90 days.
And you're like, the thing I like about you, and I think a lot of guys take a while to learn that lesson, is sure, you can go after the bigger jobs, get paid net 90, and they'll think like, oh, sure, I can float this for a while. And you know, some places are longer than that 90. Like a friend of mine does Walmart in Austin, Texas. They're like net 180. Like that's just nuts. But when you do home service, like you're leaving cash in pocket. So it's a much faster payday.
And that's where guys have struggles when they're smaller, right? Because they want to do it all. But they get so wrapped up on these larger jobs, like a new home or remodel or something that's larger, that the small customer that's calling them, they're like, oh, I'll call them back later, call back later. Next thing you know, it's like 3 days later, and you finally call them back. They're like, I already hired somebody else.
Yeah, that money's gone.
That money's gone, and that customer will never call you back until they have a bad taste in their mouth from the guy that you just hired.
How did you, because like where you are now, I know your business, like the idea of community outreach is a big part of what you guys focus on, but I know that's probably not always a direct path. Like a lot of guys are like, I need the call, I need the job, I need the call, I need the job. And to focus on community outreach, sometimes it's like this piece that doesn't always directly fit into the puzzle. What was the process by which you started thinking, hey, community outreach is something that is valuable for you and something you wanted to focus on?
You know, community outreach for me is, you know, just giving back to the community. So it ended up being more of everybody calls you for a donation, right? Everybody. I mean, the guy down the street, the guy that just picked up your business card, anybody who saw your truck go by, they all call you for a donation. That's great. They're all trying to help, you know, nonprofits or organizations. But sometimes the organizations that call you, you're like, the CEO gets paid how much, you know, or how much of your dollars actually get into the community, right? So I started doing something called Help a Neighbor, which is more of direct to the person, right? So we do free heating system installations. We partner up either with our electrician that provides a free electrical service, our vendors that help provide either equipment or parts or at a highly discounted rate. And then we provide our services, and we'll come in to somebody's home that hasn't had heat in a while. And I mean, like sometimes a couple of years.
That's crazy.
And provide them with a free heating system. And that's how we decided we could give back a little bit better if we just went directly to homeowners using what we know how to do, which is plumbing, heating, and air conditioning.
So like you mentioned earlier, there's a lot of ways you can spend money or time or effort or energy, mm-hmm. pick a way of thinking about it, on giving back to the community. Like, do you like filter these opportunities through your core values, through like, how do you actually select the things that make sense for you versus the things that don't?
I select them personally. So as people are submitting, you know, friends or families or people that they think would be a good reference for the program, I kind of filter through it. I do some background checking as far as what I can find online, either through data, real estate databases, town databases. Reach out to like their neighbors and stuff sometimes. Look at what's going on in the neighborhood.
Just to kind of validate and assess, like, how is this legit? How badly do they need it? Things like that.
Yeah, sometimes you get some stuff not legit at all, and you kind of go, this is the stuff that I worry about, you know?
Yeah. Is there any time where you felt like you got pushback from anyone on your leadership team for wanting to do something, but someone else like cautioned you against it? Like, hey, that's not a good candidate. That's not a good opportunity. Like, has that ever happened for you?
No, I've had people bring me candidates. They ended up being bad candidates. We just had a situation where that happened, and it's not anybody's fault. It's not the people that work for me's fault. I just should say, if you find somebody, let me know. And then I'll verify if they're going to be a good fit. And it was almost a good fit, but I decided not to go ahead.
Yeah.
But I've had other, you know, I've had some, we recently did something for, a veteran, he couldn't afford to get some high repair ticket repair done. We had to replace a heat exchanger on one of his field units, and we were able to take care of him free of charge and provide him the heat and hot water that he needed.
Now, do you, I know some guys struggle with this part. When you do something like help a vet or help, let's say, like a single mom who's taking care of kids, do you like write a press release, send it out to the community, talk about it on social, or do you keep it quiet to yourself?
In the earlier part, when I started doing this, I kind of kept it quiet. And then a lot of people said, listen, you got to get it out there. Let people know the good that you're doing. I know you think about it as self-promoting and stuff like that, but at the same time, people need to know what's out there and there are programs available, to help them out. This particular gentleman, I actually asked him if he wouldn't do a video recording of a testimony.
Oh, that's cool.
He had no problem whatsoever. He's like, yeah, anytime, whenever you want. And he came in and he did a video testimonial. He was here. He brought his scrapbook of, you know, everything that he's been through when he was at war. He was in Iraq. So, and I believe Afghanistan as well. So that was good to have him come in.
Yeah, that's huge, man. I know I've got a friend of mine, and I know he, salt of the earth guy, good guy, but anytime he's also probably like one of the most generous dudes I know. Always willing to help someone out, but he hates, like, he feels like this moral dilemma if he tells other people what he did for someone, you know, like he feels like it's not right. And I think one of the things that I keep challenging him on is like, bro, you can do both. Like, you can help someone because it's important to you, because it's important to the community, because it aligns with your core values, all those things. And you can talk about it in the community. And I think that connection, like when people can do that ethically and honestly, I think it's a really good spot to be. So kudos for doing that, man.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
If somebody's like seeing the success you're having, and I know, like, you know, here you are, it's 20 some ish years after you started the business, and everyone looks on the outside and sees the success that you're having, and like, I want to be like that dude. And very few people like see the grind of like putting in the time, the effort, that's hiring five guys and having to let them all go because you're not ready. What are two or three points of advice you'd give to somebody who's trying to grow their business as effectively as you have?
I'm gonna tell them one thing: it doesn't end when you leave the office. So if you think you're gonna hang up the phone and you're gonna be like, "I ain't answering the phones the rest of the night. I'm not gonna answer an email or text." I can tell you right now, that ain't going to happen no matter what, no matter how much you want to hang it up. There's just going to be days that it's just going to be like, you're going to have weeks that are suck weeks that you're going to be like, I just want to sell this. But then you just got to have a lot more better days than you have bad days. in the long term. But again, it's a grind. In a good way. I mean, if you're grinding and you're not making ends meet, you know, you really got to evaluate your situation. But you're not going to become an owner of a $7 to $10 million company and not think you're not going to put in the hard work, even though you have other people here to help you along.
Yeah, sometimes having the other people helping you along is more stress than doing it yourself. Like, it's just,
yeah,
that's the nature of business.
Right now, this year is going to be a big process year. You know, our processes haven't really been defined. And this year we're working on our processes and putting them in place and revamping our manuals and everything. We actually bought into, I don't know if we can name drop, but Al Levy's, you know, 7-Power Contractor.
Oh, Al is the man. He's going to be on our show in a couple weeks, actually. So
oh, really? So you can give him this tidbit, right? You know? So we just bought into his system and we're going to start to employ his system into our business. It really needs it. I think for us to get to the next hurdle, this is what we got to do.
And for those who are on the fence or don't understand the power of Al's framework and processes, previous conversation we had with Tommy Mello, I don't remember, it just dropped a few weeks ago, but Tommy credited Al with so much of A1 Garage's success.
And that's really where I got it, you know, listening to all these different podcasts. I didn't listen to podcasts. You know, I started listening to podcasts, I don't know, a year and a half ago, and all of a sudden it's like, I don't go work out without listening to a podcast. You know, it's part of my life now.
I think that's one of the traits, though, of people who are successful and effective is that they're always learning. Like,
yeah,
they're awesome. Always wanting people who are further along, who are smarter, who've done something they haven't. Even if it's unrelated to the trades, you know, like I've heard people like want to learn about people at IBM or GE, like how do they build teams and establish cultures? That's cool and awesome. But yeah. Guys who invest in themselves to always learn, always improve, those are the ones who seem to always rise to the top.
Yeah, and I think people sometimes they look at podcasts and go, oh, I can't find that interesting. It's because you didn't find the right one yet.
Yeah, they haven't listened to your story.
Yeah, and once you find the right podcast, you know, it just snowballs and, you know, you start to get those other recommendations. Oh, you're going to like to listen to this one if you've been listening to that one. You know, and you're going to learn a lot. You know, this is where all your windshield time is, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Driving between jobs is a perfect time to brush up. 100%. Yep. Dude, I am really proud of the success you're having because obviously, to your point, it's not an easy road. It's not always a straight line, but you continue to invest in yourself, make yourself and the company better. Super proud of what you're doing. If somebody wants to hit you up, Al, and like learn more about your business, maybe stop by, do a shop tour, pick your brain. Sure. Is there a good way you want people to reach out to you?
Yeah, they can always email me, al@afphpro.com, or you can reach out to me on my work cell. And I have no problem leaving it here. It's 978-735-2845. Just shoot me a text.
Dude, I know you're busy and I know you've got some crazy goals to crush. So, dude, thanks for stopping by being on the show. It's good to meet you like the first time face to face like this.
Yeah. Thanks, Ryan. Crushing, man. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Thank you.
This episode was hosted by Ryan Redding, author of the book on digital marketing for plumbing and HVAC contractors and founder of Levergy, the digital marketing solution for serious home service companies. You can subscribe to Blue Collar CEO on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Visit us online at bluecollar.ceo and find us on Instagram. And don't forget to subscribe and leave a review. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next week with another awesome episode. See you soon.